Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Jeff, and I'm an alcoholic. Would everyone please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to a silent profile, and please try and keep disruptions to a minimum. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. In view of support of AA singleness of purpose, we respectfully ask that sharing be confined to alcoholics. And when discussing our problems, we confine ourselves to those problems as they relate to alcoholism. There may be visitors here who are unfamiliar with our tradition of anonymity. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and television. This tradition is a constant reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA. We are sure that the anonymity is the greatest safeguard AA can ever have. We therefore seek your cooperation in protecting the anonymity of our members at the public level. The format of tonight's meeting will be 3 10-minute speakers, followed by a fourth speaker until approximately 8:30. The meeting will then be opened from the floor and closed at 9 o'clock. Can we please have a moment's silence to remember tradition 5? Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Thank you to our first three speakers. I would now like to introduce tonight's final speaker, Gail.
Hi everyone, my name's Gail, I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Mark, for asking me to share. It's always a privilege and an honour to share at my home group because, as I say, when I came in, I had nothing useful to say, nothing that anybody would have wanted to listen to. And today, through the practice and principles of the 12-step program, continuous sponsorship, and my home group, to whom I cleave, you know, so closely, I found a way of living sober, which is just beyond remarkable, considering the alcoholic that I am. My sobriety date is the 1st of April, April Fool's Day, 1998. So I was 20 on Easter Sunday this year, and I am so humbled and so grateful by that, because I've only done this one day at a time, just as anyone else has, but I have also done it only with the help of my sponsor, my home group, and the old-timers who've always been there for me, always guided me. And, you know, even quite recently, you know, the guys here were talking about it. You know, it's easy sometimes to take your foot off the gas, even if not consciously. And I have never thought I don't need AA. I've always known I need AA. I've always known I need sponsorship. And I've always known I need this program and my home group. Yet, as I say, not so long ago, there was a time when things sort of got on top of me, work and that sort of thing. And my sponsor and sponsor needed to have a strong word. And when they have a strong word, they have a strong word, if you know Mary. And basically, as I say, I needed to be here, but they love me enough. This home group is so good at just saying, you need to get back on this now. If you drift off into that long grass that John talks about, you know, it is so simple to just keep walking without actually, it is so subtle that it's upon you before or upon me before I know. And so thank God, you know, I had people in this group who cared enough to just say, you need to do this. And although I was doing all the suggestions and the other things, you know, it was just like one meeting. It's not okay. It's not okay for me. So when I came 20 years, I mean, it's just, I'm just, as I said, so blessed. It just seems such an enormous amount of time, yet it seems like yesterday There came a point at the end of March in 1998 where I was ruining my daughter's lives, my family life. I was leaving my young children to drink drive to go down our little road and to the off license to just get something else to help me through the evening before my husband came home. And Mike Dawson talks about it. There just came a point one day, for nothing I can say other than divine intervention, that the drinking hadn't been worse, the hangover wasn't worse, and I just woke up to this dark, complete black hole and knew I was done, knew it was over. And unless I did something, I just knew I would die. And I phoned a family friend, a GP, and she said to me afterwards, she said, I didn't think you were going to make 20 days, let alone 20 weeks, when you came in. Now, recovery starts here. It is the place, you know, our home group is the best in the world, as other people have said. It really is, and it's given me everything I've got today in terms of being able to cope with things, the structure, the discipline, you know, the way we help each other. And when I came in here, I just knew I wanted this with every fibre of my being. And I feel very lucky that I had, I believe, step one at that point. And Pat talked about it last week, so I'm not talking particularly about treatment, but that was my journey into here. I went into treatment, and I actually happened to go into the same treatment centre as Pat went. And there was a programme about on television a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that, I had to be taken away basically from my children. I mean, it wasn't any court order or anything, but really for me and for them, that I should allow them time to recover, if you like. And the first thing the counsellor said was to the house as a whole, he said, you are not in recovery, you are in treatment. We tell you when to get up, we tell you when to go to bed, we tell you when to eat, we tell you when to go to group. Recovery starts when you walk out of those gates and you make the decision that you will go to meetings, you will find a sponsor and go through a 12-step program, find yourself a home group, and you will do this day after day after day. If you want sobriety, that is recovery, we're treatment. And I knew at that point I desperately wanted, and Dave Kay talks about, you know, that his sponsor said, be the one. And that is genuinely what I wanted to be. And for family reasons, I actually had to leave treatment early, very briefly, to go home for a family thing. And I'm so, so grateful that happened to me, because the last things they said to me in the counsellor was, get to meetings. And I was terrified at that point, because I'd only been dry a few days, that I was going to drink. So I found a meeting. And thank God, you know, because Mike D was there, Andy J was there, and Martin, who is no longer with us. And I have never in my life heard people talk the way these guys talked. I didn't know, they hadn't been long in recovery. And they were enthusiastic, and they were saying you could be sober, you could be happy, you could live this wonderful life. And I was blown away. I mean, normal people don't talk like that. Normal people are sort of, yeah, it's pretty good, it's okay. But these guys were literally on fire. And also there, although I didn't know at the time, was the person who was going to be on my sponsor. And I came away from there and absolutely full of hope that if these guys could do this, this is what I wanted when I came out. And so I did the time there, but it was a 12-step program, so I was very, very lucky. But when I came here, I knew this was real living. I knew that whatever happened there wasn't it. It was a term of dry safety. And I remember saying to the counsellor two or three days in, when my sort of head had cleared a bit, I need to go home now. My children will miss me. They'll be really worried about me. They'll. And he said to me, He was the first person I genuinely believe who was genuinely honest with me. And he said, have you ever thought that your children might be having the first safe nights of their young lives for quite some time because they don't have to worry about you? And it hit me between the eyes like a rock. And I knew instinctively he was telling me the truth. And that's the first time I ever got any degree of honesty, real honesty in my life, and I knew he was right. So when I came out, the first thing I needed to do was get a home group and find a sponsor. And I'm so grateful that, you know, through a set of circumstances and people, I found this home group and I got a sponsor. And you guys all said the same thing. That if I wanted this program, if I wanted recovery, if I wanted happy sobriety, not just awful dry days, which were few and far between for me because I wasn't good at even having dry time, then I needed to do what you'd done. But you made me promises. You said these promises are in the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're through the 12-step program. You work with us to do this, and you can have this. Now, the guys that were here when I first came in are still here. There are a handful of them. And I'm so grateful, you know, and it's not just, you know, lip service. I am so grateful to Wayne and to Alexis for starting this group because I needed something that had that depth and weight that they talk about, because it's only that interest that can define an alcoholic and keep them interested. Because that frothy emotion appeal they talk about, people had tried all their lives, and I just wasn't interested. I'd either play it or I would say, yeah, yeah, and think they don't mean me. But when I got here, they told me, you told me I had this allergy to alcohol. I was physically allergic to alcohol and created this obsession with it that no matter what I thought, I had to have it. And, you know, one drink too many, a thousand never enough. And that was really true for me because, you know, the places I sort of got into, the scrapes I got into, I just, goodness me. But I always got tricked into thinking it'd be okay next time. And the worst thing was that when I stopped or tried to stop or tried to live differently, I just felt so much worse, that it wasn't worth living like that. It was painful. It was injurious to me and to others, and I would start again. And, you know, I mean, Clancy talked about it in one of his shares, that his parents split up, and it was unusual in those days, and he thought, that's it, it's their fault, I'm going to blame them. And I did exactly the same thing. And, of course, it's absolute nonsense, because far worse things happen to many, many people, you know, and they don't behave like that. And it was my crutch, you know, and I mean, I was the one, like Jackie says, I was sitting at school looking out of the window, gazing and dreaming about going here, there or everywhere, anything other than school. And it soon became a part of my life. And so my parents never had very much booze in the house, but once it was only my dad, you know, there, I just took what was in there and got drunk and thought, I want to do that again. You know, I was ill, didn't matter. And then this phenomenon of craving started quite early, where I just thought, I've got to do this weekend, I've got to do it, I've got to go out. And I was restless, irritable and discontent. I did manage through life to get some really good opportunities, and I'm so grateful for those. You know, a lot of them are screwed up because, you know, again, as it says in the big book, it didn't matter what I was heading towards, what was so important, exams or meetings or whatever. The time and the place would come just before, and I think, well, I'll just have that little drink, you know, because it'll make me feel better. Well, of course, there's no such thing to me as a little drink. It just doesn't happen. And before I knew where I was, I'd missed the deadline, missed the meeting, missed the exam, or failed the exam. But I did manage to get a career that I deeply love, and that again is divine intervention to me. And so I crawled into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just said, help me. The God question didn't bother me at all. I'd been going to church for quite some years. I used to go to St. Andrew's, with the girls and my then husband. And it was so, when we started having our birthday dinner at St. Andrew's and then went up to the Preston room, it just was so symbolic to me, and I can't tell you the feeling, because when this group was set up in 94, at that time I was going to the church, but also in the summer holidays I was part of the groups that would run the holiday club, and we would be all over that church doing different things with young people, and one of them was the Preston room. And to think that that was going on and I still had 4 years of hell left in me, just today I just sit there and think, thank God, but I didn't know that wonderful thing was going on upstairs when I was downstairs seeking I don't know what. But what I was seeking was some way out of this misery and this awful way of living. And I didn't know until I came in that this wasn't about alcohol. This was about my inability to live life on life's terms, to accept what other people do naturally. As Jack said, you know, like his girlfriend, I saw people being kind and considerate and caring, and I tried to do all that, but it didn't always work. And then Mark always makes me laugh because he says, and Nick I think it is, that he always lets that first person out in the mornings in the car. And I tried that. And I'm normally coming home from night duty, so I let them out. And then it's, don't you have a modicum of manners? Thank you costs nothing. And I just think that's not how it's meant to be. And suffice it to say, with my driving, Wayne's only let me give him a lift once. And I have tried to improve that. But those sort of things were just not in my nature, and I came and I learnt. It doesn't matter what age you come in, I needed to learn, and that meant I became sponsorable. I did the suggestions that I was given. I got a basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. I studied the doctor's opinion, which told me who and what I was and how these conditions had come about, and how, you know, if I was lucky and did these things. When I say lucky, I'm talking about willing to listen and do these things, because so many come in and think they can rearrange it, do half and still get away with it. It doesn't happen. And I was to get on my knees in the morning and pray for a sober day, which for me was miraculous, and to pray at night for having had a sober day. And again, that was miraculous, because I just simply didn't before I got here. To write a gratitude list. And my gratitude list today is, I think, like John, it's you know, books and books and books and books. And I am just so grateful that I can get grateful. I mean, I was out today in Plymbridge, and, you know, with the dogs, and it all went well until I lost the car key. But just being able to enjoy that time and not feel all screwed up and scrunched up inside, because I needed that drink, I needed that certain release that would come with that first drink, and just enjoying everything that was around me. And then getting a home group and making myself accountable to that home group. Now, in this home group, the structure and discipline will dictate that. If we don't do our service properly, we will be told, and that's happened to people, it's happened to me. You know, and when I first came in, we still had people smoking, so we used to put out ashtrays and saucers in the group. Then we'd go out and collect all the cigarette butts at the end of the meeting. Auntie German was in, he did tea, and he insisted on knowing what everybody had, black, white, coffee, tea, sugar, and that was a little benchmark for everyone else to want to better that. So these things created a group that I could fit into, but only if I was willing to put in what you guys had put in. And the group's changed over the years. Of course it has. You know, it's grown, it's ebbed, it's flowed, and it's irrelevant. My sponsor has always said to me, get yourself to your meeting, sit on your seat, take your place, and share for the newcomer. And for me, I know it's the only thing to do, because if you guys hadn't been here when I needed you so desperately, And I had gone fairly far down. I mean, the only reason I didn't end up on the streets is because I was blessed to have people around me who actually looked after me. But they couldn't stop. They couldn't stop what was happening to me. And I didn't understand it any more than they did. But as the consequences got worse, I still didn't have that ability to call a halt to it. But when I got here, you gave me the key. I needed to have step one, admit I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable. The unmanageability was that I, no matter what I promised, what I thought, I would take that drink again. You know, my life was sort of fairly cobbled together, but I had that awful fear around life. I mean, taking children to school, if the, you know, someone came to the door, I'd dive behind the sofa. All these irrational things which were so real in my head, and the only thing that would fix it. And then you just said to me, you're bog standard alcoholic. We're all the same. We can't live life on life's terms unless we have this spiritual awakening, this psychic change by doing these 12 steps. Be prepared to make amends. Admit that there's a higher power that is greater than you. And to me, it is God, without a shadow of a doubt. It is God. But it's irrelevant. No one cares what your higher power is, as long as you've got one and don't think you're it. And then when I've given myself, I choose. I made that decision. It says very, very strongly in step three, made a decision. No one forced me. No one can force an alcoholic to do anything. But I made that decision to hand my will and my life over to the care of God. And then I made that list of step four, all my defects of character, my goodness, enough, go on. And I just saw for the first time I was the maker of not only my misery, but the misery of people, everyone around me I loved. Not deliberately, but it was always going to happen. And the only way I could clear my side of the street was to be full and thorough with it, totally honest in a way I've never really known honesty before. Put down my defects of character, my pride, my jealousy, my arrogance, everything, my dishonesty, and then share it with my sponsor and God as I understood them. And that weight that lifted, that rucksack that had been on my back for so many, many years was lifted. And of course, I was always going to make mistakes and have my defects. But in 6 and 7, it said that, you know, if we honestly pray to have those removed, then they can be manageable. They can be right-sized. And if they get out of control again, then you've got a sponsor, you've got old-timers who will tell you, trust me. And then in 8, you know, which is your step four, first column, you make amends. You write a list of people that you need to make amends to. And I was still beaten enough, so I never sort of said, this I won't do. I knew I needed to. And in step 9, that's what I did. I went out. You know, some I couldn't make amends to, like my father. He'd already died. But I wrote a letter and read it out to my sponsor. And I was able to make amends to my mother, who, you know, who'd been worried sick for years and years. And to my daughters, which is a great blessing. I mean, my eldest daughter still just this isn't happening to her. The only thing she allowed me to do was make amends to her. And however, you know, anyone takes those amends, it is entirely up to them. It's my job to make sure that I try to make those amends and you know, then just show them that I'm not going to behave like that, because I don't behave like that anymore today. I live in a completely different world where she can trust me. My grandchildren never see me drunk, and you know, we do have one life, both the children, and I've got a career that I'm truly blessed to do. But at the end of this, if I'm not sharing back, if I'm not doing my step 10s and looking at my part in everyday life, and maybe at work I just need to nip into the loo or close my eyes, you know, just to, God help me, that person's just going to get it. You know, I've got to see my part in it all the time. And then through prayer and meditation. Now, for me, a large part, and this is only me, one of the things that has helped me really significantly is when we had our lovely days going to Buckfast, is that Buckfast Liz being able to... I just decided I'd read the Modern Bible, which is all in everyday terms. And I've used that as my step 11, and it's been incredible to do something that has meaning to me, because before it was all about, well, I want to get this and I want to get that. And today I have a wonderful home life. I'm married to a wonderful guy that, you know, some of you know. And as I say, I don't live in a war zone, but most importantly, I've got happy sobriety, and I'm so blessed and grateful for that. And I know I use the words blessed and grateful, but that this, you know, this program from Dr. Bill and Bob, were Dr. Bob and Bill, you know, was created by divine intervention, I believe, because how else could this have come about? Because thousands, millions died before this. And just the thing I want to end on is, in the basic sets, it said, I've been brought up to believe in God, but I know that until I found this AA program, I had never found or known faith in the reality of God, the reality of his power that is now with me in everything I do. Thank you.